You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Folks, don't give up hope. There is always hope, and we've got an expert guest with us for the next half hour to talk about the moment of hope that we may find ourselves in. Yes, MAGA controls the presidency in both houses of Congress and, well, the Supreme Court. But Democrats are applying pressure to save access to health insurance for some 22 million Americans. So hope does spring eternal. I'm so excited to be talking with her. Her name is Jennifer Sullivan. She is the Director of Health Coverage Access for the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Welcome, Jennifer. It's so important for people to understand what's at stake in the shutdown. It's not just about furloughed employees and air traffic controllers. Healthcare access for tens of millions of Americans is on the line.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me today, Maggie. It's good to be with you. You're absolutely right. We've got health coverage on the line for more than 22 million people who get their health insurance through the Affordable Care Act marketplaces, or healthcare.gov, as it's known in many states. And we can get into all the details, but I think the important thing to keep in mind is at the beginning is who gets insurance through the marketplaces? Let's start there.
Yes.
This is about people. The marketplaces were created because we had this gap in our health coverage system back in 2010 when the law was debated, 2009, where if you didn't get health insurance through your employer, you didn't have an affordable option available to you. And heaven forbid you had pre-existing conditions, and then you couldn't even buy an overpriced plan on a private market. And what the Affordable Care Act did is say, let's create a place where people can buy good health insurance, high quality health insurance, even if they don't get that through their job. And if people need a little help paying for that because they're of their income, then let's provide some help to do that as well. And so we have a marketplace that serves one in four of the enrollees in the marketplace is a small business owner or is self-employed. This is a critical safety net for those folks. It's also really important for young people, people coming out of high school, people coming out of college that don't have their foot in the door, don't have a job that is offering high quality benefits, then they can purchase coverage through the Affordable Care Act. And then you've got folks at the higher end who are approaching retirement, but aren't quite there yet. They can enroll in Medicare, but they're up in years, they probably have increased healthcare needs. And the marketplace, about 23% of marketplace enrollees are in that sort of 55 to 64 bucket. So I just think it's important to start these conversations about the human side of it. We can talk numbers all day long, but these are people who are working hard. By definition, if you're in the marketplace, you have an income, you're trying to make ends meet, and this is how you get your health insurance.
Yeah, and this is the thing. If Republicans, if the MAGA regime are not willing to come to the table and address this problem right now, tens of millions of people will likely either be grossly underinsured or not insured at all. And that doesn't mean that they're not going to have healthcare needs. It just means that people will either go bankrupt, be sicker, and or not get the preventative care that they need. And the folks that have emergency situations will still show up in the ERs for those life-threatening conditions. And because they're under or uninsured entirely, that has a domino impact on those who are fortunate enough to have good quality insurance through their employers, which is the traditional way. Jennifer, I wanted to get into who we're talking about, because when we talk about the tax credits that help people afford it, how does this operate? What are the particular details of the refunding or the restoration of these tax credits that help people afford health coverage through the ACA? How does it operate? And specifically, what is the credit? And what sort of income ranges are we talking about? Because I think folks have mixed ideas about who it is that needs this help.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've always had these, we call them premium tax credits, these tax credits that have been available to help to lower people's monthly premiums if they're buying health insurance through the marketplace. And the amount of help that you get is based on your income and your household size. And we do a little calculation to figure out what the right amount of help is for somebody based on how many people are getting covered, how many people in their family, and what their income is. The marketplace doesn't lock somebody into a specific plan. It says, we're going to calculate how much help you get. And then this is America. That's called the marketplace after all. You take that credit and you can apply that to whatever plan you want on the marketplace. Somebody thinks they don't have a lot of needs, they can go for a less expensive plan. Somebody knows that they have a lot coming up this year or just have expensive prescription drugs. Maybe they want something that is going to offer more benefits. So there's a lot of choice. But at the end of the day, what we have had happen over the last few years and what's at the center of this debate is that we made those credits more generous in 2021. Markedly more generous, including allowing people with very low incomes below 150% of the federal poverty level to get a silver level, what we call the benchmark plan for without having to pay a premium. So the tax credit would cover the whole cost and does cover the whole cost of the premium for those folks. Particularly important in states that haven't expanded Medicaid because you have folks, it doesn't fill the entire coverage gap, like we call it, but it does allow people with income right around the poverty level to have an affordable option and a way to get health insurance that otherwise wouldn't exist. And also, the enhancements also made coverage or made the tax credit available to people with income over four times the federal poverty level that had been the hard cutoff before 2021. But only if your premiums exceeded 8.5% of your income. So we're talking, you know, $600 a month for a two-person family. So it's a high bar to get any assistance at all at that over 400% level, but it helps smooth what is otherwise a cliff, where if I make, you know, $50 more this year, then all of a sudden I can't get any help at all. So those are two really important kind of bookends in yes. how this enhancement was structured, but everybody in the middle is getting more help right now too. And if that help goes away, then you're going to have millions of people who will say, I simply can't afford it. I'm going to go uninsured because this is not something that fits in my budget.
It's shocking to me. Some of the estimates, you know, say a married couple around the age of 60, making $80,000 a year, they're looking at premiums going from somewhere in the ballpark $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 to $22,000 to $24,000+ a year. That is simply not doable on a household income of $80,000. No one can pay 25% of their income for health insurance. We've been hearing from listeners that for the first time have to access health insurance through the marketplace who have chronic disease or have very high cost prescription drug needs, and they are petrified of what's going to happen. I have yet to hear, Jennifer, any response other than we'll talk about that later from MAGA representatives in the halls of Congress or in the White House. Especially from the president, are you aware of any plan to address this soon to occur? I mean, we're talking about November 1st when the exchanges open. Have you heard anything from MAGAs about their proposed solution when tens of millions of people wake up and realize they can't afford anything close to the health insurance that they were able to afford previously?
Right. You know, it's Congress. They can always come up with a reason to kick the can. I talk about it as thinking about these tax credits as in their expiration as a house on fire.
Yes.
You can wait. You can wait to put, sure, you don't have to put the house out right now. Let it burn. But the damage will be greater the longer that you wait. And in fact, people are starting to see their premiums right now. We have a handful of states where they run their own marketplace, so not healthcare.gov, and they have started to post their premiums for 2026. So people can look there and get a side-by-side and start to see, oh my goodness, hundreds of dollars more a month, thousands of dollars a month in some cases. And when people get that kind of sticker shock, their reaction is typically not, well, Congress will probably fix this. I'll come back in a few months. This will probably be better in January. People are going to get scared. And the more people that start to see this, the fewer people are going to wait around or expect that things are going to get better. They're going to decide this is not for them. And getting people to come to the marketplace full stop is an effort that happens every year, a big outreach effort, and getting people to come back again and sort of convince them that we fixed this thing that was very scary that you saw a few months ago or a few weeks ago is going to be a gargantuan task. And that's why the expectation is that if we push this down the road, even more people, 1.5 million more people will become uninsured if this doesn't get acted on until the end of December. That was a Congressional Budget Office number from a little while back.
Yep. Folks, we're talking with Jennifer Sullivan. She's the Director of Health Coverage Access for the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. You can find some of their most recent analysis by going to their website, and we'll put the link to their most recent study in our show notes for today, folks. Here's one tidbit that I wanted to pick up on here, Jennifer. It is completely absurd for MAGAs in congressional leadership to talk about, well, we'll have this discussion after the government reopens. One, because as we just talked about, those exchanges open for the states that don't run their own exchanges on November 1st. And guess what, folks? The exchanges only open for a limited window of time. So if we can't fix this, at least before the first or during the window of time that the ACA exchanges are open in the vast majority of states, people won't be insured for an entire year's worth of time, which means people will get sicker and freaking die. I just wanted to check my analysis on that. Like, this isn't, oh, well, we'll fix it and then everybody can access the exchange. That exchange is open for a very short window of time, November, December, which, by the way, the big brutal bill made a shorter window of time. So this isn't a lie to say we can just deal with this later. The only time to deal with this is right now.
That's absolutely right. The credits, the enhancements to the credits expire at the end of December. Open enrollment ends on January 15th. I'd want to make a quick point, which is that more than half of enrollees don't actively come back every year and look at the website. They hit the set it and forget it button, like most of us do, to make our lives easier. More than half of people aren't going to find out what their premiums are until they get a notice in the mail the last 2 weeks in December, when there's a little bit going on for most of us. Then they get sticker shock, and they have 2 weeks to take action before they are locked out of coverage for the year if it's not affordable for them.
And that will be a disaster for, again, tens of millions of Americans, folks sicker, folks that will die, because Republicans don't want to have a good faith conversation about this problem right now, which is when we need to deal with it. I want to talk about when we come back. We're going to have to take care of a couple of short messages here before we come back. But on the other side, I want to get to these two concepts with our special guest this half hour. The first is dwindling insurers willing to provide coverage through the exchanges and what that means long term for premiums. Hint, they're going to go up more. And secondly, is this a not so subtle effort to crash the entire ACA? They couldn't legislate it away, so they're going to kill it by making it unsustainable. We're going to discuss that next here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us, folks.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
These are not going to be all right. They're going to be very messed up if Republicans and MAGAs in Congress are not willing to have a good faith conversation about the cliff that we are hurtling ourselves towards as a country when it comes to healthcare accessibility. And I mean affordable, high quality health insurance. We've got a special guest with us this half hour. She is Jennifer Sullivan, the Director of Health Coverage Access for the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. You can find out more about the center and their work specifically on the ACA and health insurance premiums for folks that access their health insurance through the ACA exchanges by going to cbpp.org. Right before the break, Jenny, we talked a bit about, and I was queuing up the fact that, for example, in the state of Wisconsin, we have had for a long time a nonprofit health insurance carrier that provided insurance to folks through the ACA that was participating in the ACA. It's called Common Ground. There are a few other nonprofit health insurance carriers. These health insurance carriers are dropping out of the exchanges because the risk pool of folks that will access health insurance at these extraordinarily increased premiums because of the big, brutal bill, when something gets much more expensive, those that think they can go without health insurance aren't going to insure, which makes the folks that are still going to try to figure out a way to get health insurance, the folks that will have greater needs, meaning it's more risky. So the nonprofits that didn't register to raise their prices at the 30-plus percentage level, which is what we saw here in Wisconsin for the for-profit health insurance carriers, they're dropping out of the exchanges. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on there and the fact that the fewer carriers we're seeing in the ACA, willing to provide insurance through the ACA exchanges, makes the ACA, frankly, more vulnerable. And over time, not just in this next insurance period, will make it more likely that folks will continue to see higher and higher premiums. Because again, these are for-profit companies, not the nonprofit health insurance carriers. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, absolutely, Maggie. It's insurers don't exist out of the goodness of their heart. They are businesses and they have to make business decisions. And when it looks like a whole lot of customers are going to go away and are going to be paying premiums, they make decisions based on that information. And what we saw with rate filings over the summer, spring, summer, heading into this year for next year, was insurers obviously jacking up rates enormously, more than we've seen in many, many years. They have to explain what they're doing when they do that. They have to have a justification. And so we can read these justification statements and they're reacting to medical inflation, they're reacting to tariffs, and they're reacting to changes in regulations and in the law that are going to reduce the number of people who get coverage through the marketplace. And so it's a chicken and egg, but they react to that news and say, then we have to increase our rates so that we can continue to have enough money coming in our doors to provide coverage. And at the same time, they know that people will see those higher rates and be less likely to keep coverage. So it's a really, it's sort of an obvious thing when you think about spreading risk, right?
Yes.
There's only so many people in the marketplace. You reduce the number of people, the people that are left have to pay more. And the people that are left tend to be people with higher healthcare needs. And right. So this process repeats from one year to the next where you see premiums continue to go up and up.
And that, folks, is why you saw in the original version of the ACA the mandated coverage, because everyone was in, it would keep costs down because the risk, there would be just a lower overall level of risk when everyone is getting health insurance. This leads me to what I think is actually going on. While many Republicans, I don't think, have a grasp of the facts, right? I think they're being lied to by leadership. We saw Marjorie Taylor Greene jumping ship this week and saying, oh, wait, we actually need to do something about this. I've never agreed with her. Finally, wow, okay, a blind squirrel does find a nut every once in a while. My theory has always been that the nerds, the wonks in the MAGA regime from the Heritage Foundation, the folks that authored Project 2025, their objective has always been to create death by a thousand cuts of the ACA. You get rid of the mandate. There's now this retracting, this pulling back, this defunding of these premium credits. This, again, increases risk levels, makes it all much more expensive. This has this cycling impact, this domino impact, this pernicious circle that you just described. Does your organization perceive that the ultimate aim here may be to break the ACA? They couldn't legislate it, but if they can make it collapse, they still get to where they wanted to go.
We are seeing that play out. We're seeing that play out in what's in the regulation and the law on the marketplace. We're seeing it play out on what's to come for Medicaid. The worst has not started in that place, right. But it is certainly coming, and it's coming for rural hospitals. We've already started to see some of that impact. And what I will say is, in this moment, as the government is shut down and this issue of premium tax credit enhancements is at the center, this is a policy choice. And premiums can go up, and they do. And the marketplace always sort of, we knew that when we designed it. creating the premium tax credit the way we did helped insulate people from that. And we are right now, if the enhancements aren't continued, we are choosing to take away that shield and expose people to all of this. So we have a policy solution. This isn't an unsolvable problem. It is a choice.
It is a choice that Republicans and MAGAs are making every day to not negotiate in good faith and to not tell the American public and Wisconsinites the truth. And make no mistakes, folks, the congressional delegation from the state of Wisconsin, Brian Steil, Derek Van Orten, Scott Fitzgerald, Glenn Grothman, Tom Tiffany, and Tony Weed combined have, let's see here, I'm doing some math on the air, have about 80,000 of the 96,000 Wisconsinites that have insurance at risk because of the big, brutal bill that every single one of them signed onto. If you live in their congressional districts and you get a shock near the holiday time because your ACA premium is now unaffordable, you know who to thank. The MAGAs in the Wisconsin congressional delegation and the one in the White House. Thank you so much to Jennifer from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Stick around, folks. Ask Maggie up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. The first thing I remember is that facts matter. The truth matters. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. Big thanks to our last guest, Jennifer Sullivan, from the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, for being with us this Friday afternoon. We're going to get to Ask Maggie in just one second. But I wanted to get, we had a couple of callers, Kathy from Cambridge and Dale from Wausau. I want to take them in just a second. Dale, hang on there. Kathy, if you're still listening, I do want to get your call in if we can. I wanted to just finish right before the top of the hour. I had played some sound from a farmer who was asked a question about Trump's promised bailout of farmers. And listen, the economic analysis is pretty simple here. The tariffs are basically robbing from farmers. It makes all of their operating costs much more expensive. It is also hurting their business because they can't export their products. So literally, Donald Trump is sticking his hand into family farmers' pockets and robbing them. And he's going to make up for it by what? A bailout? And just so you know, what's happened in the last half an hour, more or less, is that Donald Trump waited for the stock market to close and then announced a 100% tariff on China over and above any tariff that they are currently paying. Wow. So the markets are completely freaking out. Even before that announcement, just off of his indication that he might do more tariffs, the NASDAQ was down 3.6%, the Dow Industrials down about 2.8%. This is not good. And again, all of that before he said he's going to put another 100% tariff on top of the already like 30%+ tariffs. This is going to kill farmers. So I wanted to play the sound of a farmer addressing the fact that literally Donald Trump is robbing them blind and then saying, that's fine because I'm going to give you a bailout. Take a listen to this farmer addressing that point.
I have to ask, where do you stand on the White House's idea of helping farmers with tariff money that is being collected?
That's the most ridiculous thing. Let me explain to you.
Okay.
Your listeners, excuse me. Those tariffs I'm paying on inputs just this spring, and all of our parts, many of our parts come from other countries, all right? Just this spring, I go to my local John Deere dealer. I need a chain for my corn planter. I take it out of the box, John Deere box, dealt with these people for 40 years, John Deere part number, turn it over, it says made from China. Okay, I'm thinking, wow, that's odd. I just paid a tariff on that doggone thing. So here's the deal. I'm paying that tariff because my importer, John Deere, paid it. They paid it directly to the Treasury. Now the President of the United States is going to take my money and give it back to me and call it a bailout? That's just comical. And I tell you what, this administration has got agriculture, has got farmers exactly where they want them. And that is in need of what only Trump can deliver, and that's a bailout. What a terrible place for agriculture to be. Farmers are independent. They are independent businessmen and women, and they want to live off the land. They're creating income off the land for their communities, and President Trump has them right where he wants them.
in a place of need. Absolutely ridiculous. Benga Ajilore, chief economist at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, described it this way. It's like robbing Peter to pay Peter. Terrible. And I wanted to make this point additionally. This has not been reported in any mainstream press that I have been able to find. The Labor Department, in a federal filing uncovered by the American Prospect, has said that we are about to face a food system emergency due to the mass deportation program. Again, this was in a federal filing uncovered by the American Prospect. The Trump Labor Department wrote this. There is, quote, significant risk of supply shock-induced food shortages. The department does not believe American workers currently unemployed or marginally employed will make themselves readily available in sufficient numbers to replace large number of aliens. Oh, great. So, yeah, that inflation and maybe food shortages. I'm sure that'll bring grocery prices down. Dale from Wausau, thanks for your patience, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, Maggie. One thing I wanted to ask is Mike Johnson is refusing to confirm a newly elected House of Representatives woman. I believe it's from Arizona. And I'm wondering what can be done to force him to confirm her.
It's a great question, and the answer is nothing. To be clear, and we played sound of this earlier in the week, Mike Johnson confirmed Republican newly elected congresspeople during a pro forma session. A Democratic representative moved to have that done in the House's last pro forma session. He refused to do so. And Mike Johnson continues to keep the House out of a full session while there is a shutdown. Make any of this make sense? I certainly cannot. Very briefly, Cam, because we want to get to Ask Maggie. What you got for us, Cam, from Appleton?
Hey, thanks. I'm just so tired of people blaming everyone but themselves when it comes to politics. The thing that you just read right there didn't even take blame on the government's behalf. It took blame and said, you know who has it? It's the U.S. People that are not going to work quick enough.
Yeah. This is the rooster is coming home to roost. And again, you're seeing this in federal filings that the administration admits in some places and in courtrooms about what's actually going on, but then they get on national news programs and lie about it. Folks, we're going to put a pin in this. Do not worry. We'll be back next week. We'll continue the shutdown lookout and updates for everyone. But we do want to get a little bit of lightness in here on Friday afternoon to send you all into the weekend. Thank you, Kathy from Cambridge. We didn't get to your call. Tyler from Wisconsin Rapids. Of course, Dale from Wausau. And just as a postscript, folks, I did send our good friend CJ some of my sources for the information that I've been providing, asked him to provide a link to whatever he was referring to. We have yet to get that. We also tried to diligence CJ's claim that there was a court that concluded that Joe Biden violated immigration laws. We've been able to find none during the pendency of our program. I'll continue to look for that. But Jamie, man, I'll take a fact check from a listener. I'll look at anything, right? Full and complete information. That's what we're trying to do here.
We're always transparent here. And who's surprised that we haven't heard back?
Crickets.
Very quiet on a Friday.
But folks, those smooth dulcet tones, that is Jamie Martinson, my senior producer here. She helps cobble together your questions for me. Remember, you can send those in all week to askmaggie@civicmedia.us. And you can always shoot them in via the text line at 855-752-4842. We got a bit of an abbreviated version this Friday.
We do, Jamie. We do. And that's great because I want to start out with a comment, actually, that we got from Lynn in Milwaukee. And Lynn is actually listening on our brand new WAUK 100.3. So thank you for that, Lynn. We're very excited about
Tell
that new
signal.
Tell all
your friends. We've now got the powerful FM 100.3 all across southeastern Wisconsin.
So so excited to have that added to the Civic lineup. But she says this. She was listening to what she says was our last guest, Jennifer Sullivan, from the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. And Lynn says, I'm really concerned about the ACA price increase. Both my parents and grown adult children, young adult children, I should add, use the ACA. I just don't know how anyone is going to survive this. Sorry, she says, this isn't really a question. It's just a worried observation. And, you know, I'll be honest, going through a process with my mom herself, who is on Medicare, we're already starting to see some of the ramifications of what's going to happen. Medicine that she needs to keep her heart healthy. She has congestive heart failure. We're now looking at potentially $1,600 a month when those were basically just a small copay before. And, you know, I also have a young adult son, graduated from college, still trying to make his way and figure out a job. Because if you haven't noticed, there's not a lot of those to be had. So it's very hard for college graduates and really anybody who's job hunting right now. He's also using the ACA. And this is a conversation that we just had over the weekend, because right now that is his main source of insurance. And we're trying to navigate that. So Lynn, thank you for the comment. I think a lot of us are kind of in the same boat and hoping somebody does the right thing. I don't know if that's possible, though, at this stage of the game. Your take, Maggie?
Yeah, I've been having a lot of these conversations with folks. I had one last night. People know what I do for a living, that I care about this stuff. And I'll talk to anybody anywhere from any political persuasion about this. And I had a friend of mine, her name's Danielle. I was catching a beer watching that disappointing Cubs Brewers game. And Danielle was asking me about the ACA tax credits. And she said, Maggie, I've heard people say that the big brutal bill is cutting Medicare and Medicaid. And I'm 68 years old. Do I need to, like, what's, I rely on Medicare. What's going to happen to me? Mm-hmm. And all I could say was, I think you'll probably be okay because you're at that older tier. But I have no idea. I have no idea what's going to happen. We know that people are going to be pushed off of Medicaid and Medicare. We know that there's going to be basically more paperwork requirements. And we know that Donald Trump and the MAGAs in Washington, D.C. were very cagey in how they did the big brutal bill. It's not, those impacts aren't all going to come online January 1st. These ACA tax credits, that's the most immediate thing that's happening, right? In addition to thousands of tons of food rotting in warehouses because Donald Trump cut the portion of CHIPS that allowed local farmers to sell their food to food pantries to help people get fed. Setting that aside, what they did with the Medicare and Medicaid cuts is that most of those aren't going to start to have any impact until we start trickling to 2026, 2030, 2028, and beyond. So what they're doing is they're trying to distance themselves from the impacts, which begs a question. If you were so gosh darn proud of what you've got going on, wouldn't you have the impacts take that would happen immediately? You'd be like, hey, as of January 1st, 2026, this is what we're going to do. No. They want that spread out so that they can disclaim responsibility and blame Democrats for it. Just like Donald Trump has taken credit for the Biden infrastructure bill, the Biden CHIPS Act, different sorts of the CHIPS Act about building our nation's technology arm. So, again, same old, same old.
If it has president in front of it, apparently it's just a free for all. Everybody's responsible for it, right? I mean, that's kind of what this administration feels like. And it's sad. Now, I know we're running out of time, and Terry Barr is going to be joining us in just a moment to hopefully uplift us on a Friday. So I do have to get to this one really quickly. This comes to us from Tony, who is in Pewaukee, and he says, our Brewers need some good luck. Yes, they do. Any superstitious traditions to get them over the hump, Maggie? Anything that you can leave us with today?
I don't know if you got a pair of socks from the last time they chalked up the win this past Tuesday that you haven't washed. Maybe put those stanky socks on. Baseball is rife with those superstitions, folks. So I go with the stinky socks. Whoever you watch the Tuesday game with, watch the game tonight with those folks. And good luck to the Brewers. Thank you so much, Jamie, for this quicker version of Ask Maggie. We got Terry Barr coming up next. with what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin to send you off on a positive note for your weekend. Stay tuned, folks. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome, everybody. We are in the last segment of this week, and it is my favorite because it's positivity that we all need. And I'm always joined by my good friend and colleague here at Civic Media, Terry Barr, for a little bit of what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin. Welcome, Terry.
Hello, Maggie, and hello to all. I have my flag, or my towel, I guess I should say, from the Brewers win on Monday night.
On Monday.
I believe in them.
I just said Tuesday with Jamie, but it was Monday. All these days are just running together.
Well, the games have been late, and I think we're all tired.
Yes, absolutely.
But let me tell you this, there is going to be something new for all of us to cheer for next year. The first and only women's professional soccer team is coming to Wisconsin, and they're going to kick off in Madison next May. This is so exciting. Now, I talked with team owner Connor Kaloya, and he's also a partner in the men's professional team already in Madison. And here's kind of how he explains this good news for us.
Since we launched the men's side forward in 2019, we knew when we launched that team, we wanted to bring women's soccer here. And over the last 10, 15 years, pro soccer and soccer at the spectator level in the U.S. has really evolved quickly. You know, if you look back 15 years ago, there's maybe 40, 50 pro teams in the U.S. Now there's about 150 on the men's side. There's 23 women's pro teams, and that's quickly growing. So we've wanted to do this for a long time. The game continues to evolve. We didn't want to be on the sidelines any longer and really excited to have women's soccer here. We'll launch with a pre-professional team next May and play at Breeze. And then I think as the women's game continues to grow, we hope to grow with it. Best soccer in the world on the women's side is played here in the U.S. That's why we're so excited to get on the women's side.
Mm-hmm. Ah, so exciting.
Isn't this wonderful? Now, get this. Connor says 20,000 kids right now play soccer in just the southern part of Wisconsin. But they also are finding that a lot of kids get left behind because it can be an expensive sport to play. There's travel involved, even at a young age. So here's something that they are going to do as part of the women's program. They are starting a foundation. And when the women kick off next spring, this foundation is going to give away $90,000 worth of scholarship money to get more kids and give them, you know, the ability to be able to play soccer.
That's amazing.
Isn't that what? I mean, this is good news. And, you know, I also want to reference something that Connor talks about. They don't have enough coaches, of course. They don't have enough referees that actually know the game of soccer. So that's the step they're going to take. And they're going to be doing this across the entire state. I love this so much and happy to share this news with you, Maggie.
Absolutely. They're in sport, right?
Yes.
There are all sorts of access limitations for kids that don't come from families that can afford, frankly, just even baseline equipment, the fees to play on these teams. And it is so different than when you and I grew up, Terry, right? It used to be you could join a rec league. There'd be a team that you could join. Very cheap. Those still exist. But for kids that are especially talented or have particular interests, like these traveling teams, you got to buy like three different uniform sets and all the different colors. It's thousands and thousands of dollars to get your kid all over the place. And we haven't even talked about the one-on-one specialized coaching and the clinics and the camps. It's so expensive.
Yeah. And one thing Connor mentions too, just because you can afford to send your kid, make sure it's something your kid wants to do, especially when there might be all these other children that want to play and can't afford to. But now if there's going to be scholarship money out there for some of these kids, there needs to be room on a team for them to play as well.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I was very lucky when I was growing up in that I did enjoy sports. I played a lot of different sports. But legitimately, my parents were very hands-off about the whole thing. It was kind of like, well, if you want to do that and you enjoy it, like, that's great. And if you don't, you know, that's all right, too. And for folks that might be around my age from the Milwaukeeland area, like, my great claim to fame in my hoops career was the fact that the very famous former coach of the Lady Popes, the Pi XI, Pius the 11th High School, Joel Klassen, one of the winningest coaches in all of high school basketball history, men's or women's, thought about or approached me to come play with Pius when I was coming out of eighth grade.
I think
most parents today would have been like, yeah, you're going into that program. Right. And my folks were like, well, do you want to even go to high school at Pius? Like, you want to play basketball basically all year round and that's the only thing you do? And the answer for me was no. Yeah. I didn't really want to make that the only sport I ever played. And as it turned out for me, by the time I was a senior in high school, I had decided I needed to step back from basketball, that I needed a break between sports seasons, and I decided to go full bore into theater. And to this day, I'm so thankful that my parents didn't apply that pressure on me to, like, be the best that you can be in the sport, and you got to do it. Was such a relief for me. And as it turned out, I was able to find my other sport love that I had never played until I got to college, which was rugby, and we ended up winning a national championship in women's rugby. Yes. May 5th, 1997, Marquette women won a national championship. And the next day, I have to tell you this part, we flew home that day from Pennsylvania. We were playing at Penn State, came home. My dad gave me a couple of Ben Franklin, said, go have fun. And I had an accounting final exam the next morning. And my dad said to me, Maggie, just guess C. Thank you so much, Terry Barr. Have a blessed and safe and happy weekend. Same to each and every one of you. Go crew. Thanks for the folks on Facebook saying yes and YouTube saying the crew's got it. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together for the Milwaukee Brewers.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.